Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting imsaradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The checkered flag ends the race, but it's only the start of the conversation. Michelin post-race tag on imsaradio.com. Have your say. Ask the experts. Make your point. Michelin post-race tag. The end of the race is only the beginning.
I just waited a second there because I needed to take an extra breath. How many times in IMSA competition have I started Michelin Post Race Tech by saying, wow, and I'm going to have to do it again. Just wonderful. Jeremy Shaw, we didn't get at the end of the race broadcast there to GTD, but I think Bill Oberlin's leading that championship. Is that right?
Yeah, I reckon 920 points to the 930, Oberlin Folio 920 to the 913 of the Aston Martin team, Roman De Andrés and Ross Gunn.
Right, well, all getting very nicely tightened up indeed. Michelin Post Race Tech then, you drive the conversation. Good to have your company. Donald says, I've got no question, just what a finish. it has been a bit like that for quite some time, for quite some races in IMSA competition, Jeremy. The safety car didn't exactly fall right for anybody there, and actually that made it quite good in some respects. Nobody really got an advantage from that.
No, that's true. Fair comment. But it's a shame that
it didn't spoil the race, is what I should have said. It didn't spoil the race.
It would have been a lot more interesting, I think, if somebody had realised early on they weren't going to make it, come in, make a pit stop, and then go flat out and try and make hay. You know, obviously, those guys, they have all the numbers. They know whether it'll work or not. I'm surprised it wouldn't have done, but they would know a lot better than me, and they decided it wouldn't have, so they didn't. But just looking at the last lap of the race, Ollie Plata turned a 13-2. The leaders are doing 15-7. I think representative lap times, given the amount of traffic that there was or wasn't, and the fact that, you know, getting towards the end of the race. But I do think that it would have been worth a gamble for somebody, particularly somebody at the back of the pack there, in fifth or sixth position after that restart. It's clear at that stage everybody is trying to stretch their fuel. So if you can come in, make your stop and go out there and go fast enough, is it not worth a try? Well, yeah. As it turned out, you know, they pretty much ended the same way. Number five car, you know, having said all that, number five car, that was the last car running before the stops at the end, mm-hmm. and because it stayed out, and or because the other guys waited until the last possible minute before coming onto the pit lane, they did make up a couple of positions. They came up home in fourth instead of sixth.
And the Mazda came home in third. They made up a position as well with the rank.
Position.
But the Ollie, the MSR car, I remember seeing that they were 28 seconds back when they were trying to save fuel. They ended up 37 seconds back. So only really another 10, 12, 15 seconds behind.
They were never that far back, John.
Really?
No. No, they were never more
from
than...
From the lead.
No, I mean, lap 110, for example, they were about 8-10 seconds back, a bit over 10 seconds back, 10 or 12. Number five car.
I still don't understand why nobody didn't come in. I absolutely agree.
It would have been worth a punt, I would have thought, but hey.
This from Tom Firth at IMSA Radio.
But what's interesting in that,
sorry,
John,
go ahead.
Just finally on that thought.
Oh, no, don't worry, we'll come back to it.
To get to get to the end. The number 60 car gave up. You know, the other Acura, they gave up that strategy with four laps to go.
Yes, fair point, well made and nicely presented on that. Is that just the way it was being driven, or were they not prepared to take the chance? You would have thought that they might have been prepared to take the chance, but who knows? No, it was the five car, sorry, that was sitting at the back,
yes.
Wasn't it? Yes, you're absolutely right. My apologies. It was the five car that was sitting at the back. Shay, go ahead.
Can I just point out something? Mm-hmm. Everybody made it back to the pit lane after the race, and I did see Oliver Jarvis out of his car, fully helmeted, suited and everything, pushing the car further down the pit lane, but nobody ran out of fuel on the side of the track.
On the slowing down lap, yeah.
Yeah.
So they were a bit closer than perhaps they thought they were. Tom Firth asking, what was the issue with the left rear on the 14 Lexus? It was a broken suspension mounting. And it looked, Shay, like it just happened. We didn't see contact when it happened. Whether it was a product of some contact before is more difficult to say.
Yeah, correct. That car, which started from the pole position, remember Aaron Tielitz basically ran off and hid during the first part of his stint, didn't see any contact when he was in the car. And Hawksworth had been out of the pit lane for 24 minutes at that point in time. Mm. Could have just been a parts failure. But it's also one of those situations that makes you think coulda, woulda, shoulda, because Hawksworth and Tielitz were definitely the duo to beat, having won this race not very long ago. I was going to say a year ago, but we haven't actually got a full year on.
The GTT battle was great. Great to see Turner Motorsport winning. They are such enthusiasts for IMSA, as most of the teams are, to be fair. And the Lexus streak is broken, Jeremy. And it looked for such a long time this weekend that they were in a good position to take it on. 3 seconds at the end. Obviously, they lost the 14 car, as we've documented. The Turner guys just did a very, very good job.
Yeah. When did they not do a very good job? Good point. And once again, yeah, Robbie Foley drove a fine first stint there. He was chasing the Lexus all the way through that first stint, wasn't he? And then and then brought it home from there. So it was another expertly driven race and judged race by that team. Actually, GTD was fairly uneventful by GTD standards, because the number 14 car was in control right from the start. Aaron Tielitz pulled out a pretty handy advantage,
yes.
And then Jack Hawks was doing just fine in the lead. But then once they fell out, there was the Turner Motorsport kind of pick up the pieces, having run second through the early stages. Mm. The gainer there towards in the second half of the race was certainly Brian Sellers and Madison Snow, who did a great job to bring the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini home in third.
Wow, yeah.
And, the Aston Martin team, yet another top five finish. And, they're just a few points out of the championship lead as we head next to Detroit, I guess, is it next?
Unusually in GT Daytona, the cars got split up very early on. We had 2 seconds here, second and a half there, 3 seconds there. It sort of came back, and we had a few little 2-3 car battles. The battle between the Lamborghini of Paul Miller Racing, the Heart of Racing team, Mario Farnbacher got joined in on the end for a little while, but Lawrence Vanter was in there for a while. That entertained me. But I said in commentary that stint at the beginning by Madison Snow, where he was clearly driving to a plan, no dirty driving, no moving around, no warnings from race control, Jeremy, but that was really important in the final analysis to get that third place. And, of course, Shay told us they'd saved a new set of tyres as well, which I think played its part. You mentioned that when Brian was overtaking people.
Yeah, but I'm actually just looking through my notes. I mean, the number 1 and number 23, they were running in that same order pretty much the entire race.
Yes.
And never separated by more than a few car lengths.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of back and forth in there. The Aston actually fell back a place or two at one stage and made that up again. But the only car that sort of kind of fell out of that group was number 28, the Allegra Motorsports car that was running in the third position early on, behind the Lexus, the BMW, but ahead of the second Lexus of Frankie Montecalvo and Zach Veitch, which ended up in second place. That's the car that's kind of dropped back in the later stages and finished back in the in a 10th position. So they'll be a little bit disappointed with their finish, having run so well early on.
Just looking at the Porsche keys to the race, patience in traffic. Well, we saw a little bit of rubbing and a little bit of race incident, but I don't think anything too bad. Obviously, there was the yellow flag to get, and the Acura had to come out to get Pat Long out of the kitty litter, and that's had championship implications. The flexibility of pit stops and strategy, we saw some of that, but again, going back to what you said earlier, Jeremy, nobody took the chance at the end, which rather surprised me. We did see a few calls for pit lane and other infractions, so maybe there were one or two people who were a wee bit rusty in having not raced until since the middle of March.
Well, I've started keeping a spreadsheet going, or actually a simple piece of paper with a pen. For Daytona, it ran over to the back of the backside of the page, and that was a 24-hour race. This race, we had 7 penalties in effect, 8 penalties, actually, for the start of the race in terms of grid positioning. We had 3 penalties all race long, one of them being for Kevin Magnussen changing lanes on the start, 2 of them being pit lane penalties. This was a very clean race. I wonder if maybe it is GTD and GTLM and LMP2 that are causing all of our penalty problems.
Well, that's an interesting point. James Brown says, having tweeted in for hashtag Michelin PRT, loving the GTD action in this race. Not sure I'm missing GT Le Mans. Does it actually need a separate manufacturer GT class? Well, we are going to get a full pro GTD category next year, Jeremy. And on the evidence of what we've seen today, that could be very interesting indeed.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, quite frankly. I think GTLM has kind of served its purpose over
it's
here.
It's been great.
Sad to say, because it has. I mean, it's sad to say because I love the cars. They are very, very cool, and particularly the newer generation cars, the mid-air engined Porsche and the mid-engine Corvette too. I mean, really cool cars out there, but particularly now, with the other manufacturers pulling out, Porsche the latest one to pull out, BMW not doing a full season this year, it's just for a variety of reasons, it's not what it was. So, do we need it? No. I mean, today we had 3 classes, 2 prototype classes. One costs a good bit more money than the other one does. So there's a good entry point there for the LMP3s and the GTDs. It was brilliant. And, I think if we have a full GTD pro class next year, not going to make a lot of difference. All hopefully it will do, we'll add a few more cars.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they need to. Even they can give away a kind of an AM prize if they like, but I don't think we need different classes. Everybody's got the same car, and as we saw today, a good mix of drivers. We've got factory drivers in there. We've got gentleman drivers.
That's true.
And they're all separated at the end. They're all bar one were on the lead lap, and that was only because Catherine Legg was lapped by the leaders before the other guys were. Otherwise, Correct. Everybody was on the same lap that was still running at the end. So it was brilliant.
Fabian.
And I think we'll continue to be so. So I like, we talked about at the beginning of the show, didn't we, John, the fact that there were only 3 classes, and how I personally liked that because there were less opportunity for incidents. And that's what we saw. I mean, the only really incident on the track was the one with Patrick Long, and that was all an intra GTD
And that was racing. That was absolutely
that was
racing. A racing.
And nothing to do with multi-classes.
No. And it's sad to see that somebody's race was affected, and that we had to have the safety car out there, Shea. But that's going to happen. Fabian W agrees with Jeremy. Quite a clean race. I think fewer classes helped. Maybe limit to 3 classes for every race. That great. absolutely great. Jeremy and I have talked many times on Michelin Post Race Tech about sometimes how fewer cars is actually more, less entries are more, particularly on tight either street circuits like the days of St. Pete and certainly Long Beach, and maybe Mid-Ohio is one of those as well, Shea.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. I mean, think about it this way. Long Beach is 1.968 miles. Mid-Ohio is 2.258 miles. You've got Laguna, which is 2.2 miles as well. Those tracks could benefit from having fewer classes, and we do have fewer classes running at those. But then when you consider Watkins Glen, Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, Road America, I really feel like we would be losing something if we didn't have all the classes there running around. To be honest, I'd like to see maybe more classes running around at tracks like VIR. I love our GT showcases, but I would also be interested to see what the prototypes could do there.
Oh, don't be still my beating heart. We've had a long break, and it was just nice to see the full gamut of IMSA racing over the weekend. IPC race was great. The two Mazda races were absolutely phenomenal. I thought, Jeremy, we had a very good Michelin Pilot Challenge once again as the Saturday main. It's just good to be back at a relative degree of normality. There was a decent crowd there today on a weekend that was meant to be a Mid-Ohio IMSA race weekend.
Yeah, great. Exactly. It's super to see fans back again in numbers, as of course they were at Sebring in Florida. But in the Midwest, you know, it's only over the last few days, really, that crowds have been allowed back in many of the states. So it was you know, they weren't, you couldn't, they didn't have the normal crowd there because they weren't allowed to have the normal crowd there. But it was a good number of people. I could see on the the far side of the racetrack, there were a lot of campers out there. Which is just wonderful to see. I mean, there's always a great atmosphere around the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. A good, you know, great parkland setting. There's some great places to park your camper there and just have a great weekend of racing. And that's exactly what everybody was able to witness this weekend there for this tremendous, you know, IMSA Acura Sports Car Challenge.
Yeah, and just on the MX-5, Shea, Marco Barentswaard was watching all across the weekend from the Netherlands. He said, I think Gresham Wagner, after some odd behaviour, as he called it, at the previous event, showed good patience today after falling way back at the beginning. Eye on the job, working with others back forward and then moving forward. It's part of what makes that series great. There is a wee question mark about those losses of power that we saw for a number of the lead drivers, including Gresham Wagner there. But I think that's a reasonable comment from Marco about Gresham, his behaviour, about he was a lot more sensible and what's the word I'm looking for? Mature in his outlook in how he raced today. Sometimes you're going to be the fly, sometimes you're the windscreen. He was a bit of both this weekend and he made the best of it. Good job by all.
The kid can drive. And I say that giving him full props, I should say the young man. But he has the ability to overcome every sort of bad thing that's thrown his way. And he proved that last year in the racing too, which is another thing that perhaps it's striking a bit close to home. He had a lot of mechanical issues last year in the competition, and that's ultimately what cost him from the championship. I think the frustration that we saw at St. Pete boiling over was him realizing that the championship lead was going to disappear. And it's a very hard thing to get back. Today, he did his best to claw it back, and he did make a big difference. The problem is now, John, we've got, what, 2 and a bit months before they race at the Alana Long 100? So that's a long time to think about not leading the championship.
IMSA's back before then, Jeremy. We're on the street circuit at Belle Isle, Detroit. Slightly changed date there because things have moved around because the weekend opened up where Le Mans was going to be. So that means IMSA shares with IndyCar. And, you know, that is not your typical street circuit. There's some very fast sweepers there. I love that track. It normally gives us a decent race as well.
It does, yeah. It's a great racetrack, I think. But yeah, there's no room for mistake there. But it's a challenging racetrack, and I think we're going to have a fun weekend. The GT LM Corvettes will be there, but there will not be a regular GTM category. They'll be running purely as invitational cars.
Correct.
There, which is a shame they won't have anybody to kind of play with, but it'd certainly be great to see the Corvettes. And of course,
First time they've been there, Jeremy. First time they've ever been there, because it normally clashed with Le Mans test weekend.
Right. So, they're going to within sight of the Renaissance Centre and the headquarters of General Motors. The cars will be there. So it's great for the Detroit fans to be able to see those cars in action on that Belle Isle racetrack. And good for the driver, because they'll love driving that racetrack.
Oh, yeah. Agree with that.
And on that note, John, I'm not entirely sure that the WeatherTech Racing Porsche will be there, because it's a conflict weekend with Ferrari Challenge.
It's not there. It's been confirmed. It's not there. Yep. It's just...
It's only invitation class.
It's correct. It is a non-points scoring round for GT Le Mans. That's the next IMSA race. Next weekend, we have more live racing for you in sound and vision across the RSL network of channels, with the Kreventic Hockenheim 12 hours across Saturday and Sunday, with qualifying on Saturday in the first part of the race, and then the race completed on Sunday. 12 hours of the Hockenheim ring. Oh, yes. Can't wait for that. There's close on 40 car entry for that. Also, and I accept the fact that those of you in the UK, it will be at an inordinately odd time, but other time zones are available. We have the Asian Porsche Carrera Cup as well, which is at Zhuhai next week. And we had two great races last weekend at Shanghai. So at radio-show.co.uk, it's all on there in terms of the schedule at the bottom of the page. And you can subscribe as well. Jeremy Shea, thank you very much indeed. And I hope you've enjoyed what you've been listening to this weekend. And once again, Mid-Ohio has done what it's meant to do. My very great thanks to all of our technical team, both at RSL with Rob and Tim in London, NASCAR Productions with a variety of producers this weekend who've been working really hard at Charlotte, North Carolina. And, of course, the IMSA technical team at the track, making sure that we were heard there as well. Great to have IMSA Racing back. Great to have you back. Thanks for all your tweets. We'll be on the radio again on Wednesday, 8 o'clock UK. That's 3 o'clock Eastern, midweek motorsport, wrapping up the weekend. And Nick looking forward to the Monaco Grand Prix. Oh, and the Eurovision Song Contest as well. I wonder which one he'll be more excited about. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, such as it is. Bye-bye.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.